Now to a very different part of the world. Cuba is a country that elicits strong opinions here in the U.S., not surprising given the history of the past six decades. But we rarely consider Cuba as part of the larger Caribbean region. The communist-run island appears different through that lens. Joshua Jelly Shapiro can tell you. He's the author of a new book called Island People, the Caribbean and the World.
Cuba really is, in a lot of ways, the center of the Caribbean. You know, it's the biggest island. It was the place that the Spanish had their treasure convoy and shipped all the goods of the New World back to Europe. And, you know, there is this sort of political history in this very interesting way, these sort of romantic figures, Che Guevara and the story of the revolution, which, of course, had its sort of tragedies after it happened. But, you know, it's an incredibly sort of alluring story, this idea that, you know, in Latin America, this sort of revolution could happen and sort of say, you know, we are going to decide on this island what we want to do here, that the empires are not going to do so.
The revolution in Cuba, do you think it could have happened anywhere else in the Caribbean?
You know, I think like any watershed historical event like that, there's so much contingency, there's so much chance that's involved. But I think that there are particularities to the Cuban Revolution that make it Cuban. You know, for one thing, this incredible pride in being Cuban and the sort of Cubanness. And of course, people in Miami have a radically different vision of what it is to be Cuban.
But even the people in Miami have a sense of pride.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
No, I think that runs through Cuba and Cubanness, the sense that this is this special island. This is this incredibly potent culture. Cubans are proud people. And I think Fidel Castro, whatever one made of his politics, you know, is an incredibly proud Cuban.
So kind of reorient our U.S.-Cuba access to Cuba and the Caribbean. How does the rest of the Caribbean view Cuba? I mean, I know, you know, Nelson Mandela, a lot of leaders in Africa saw Castro as kind of a role model for them. Do you find that in other parts of the Caribbean?
Absolutely, yes. I mean, I was just, you know, I was in Cuba earlier this month in December for Fidel Castro's final send-off and funeral. And it was very striking because among the flags that were there in the crowd, you know, you had Jamaican flags and South African flags. But people elsewhere in the Caribbean, in Jamaica and Haiti in particular, you know, in the 1960s and 70s, Cuba was sending doctors, was helping build schools. Cuba was looked to as a kind of, if not a role model, then certainly as a place that exemplified ways of not following the sort of dictates of the empire, which is to say in the United, you know, the United States.
So I want to backpedal into some deep Cuban history because, as you write, Cuba was founded basically because of Havana, Great Harbor. But that history has also been for centuries an ugly history because of the role Cuba played in the slave trade. Talk about that and kind of what was different about the slave trade coming in and out of Havana as opposed to, say, Charleston or somewhere in the south of the United States.
Cuba, you know, of course, was a great sugar cane producing island, mostly in the 19th century, because once the Haitian Revolution happened, right, we couldn't get sugar from Haiti. So Cuba became this great center of growing sugar and of slavery. But what's interesting about slavery under the Spanish, right, is that they had certain different laws and regulations, one of which was that slaves were allowed to get together, were allowed to play drums.
That's fascinating because a lot of countries did not permit this, right?
That's right. And notably,
and even on the slave ships, they allowed the cargo to play drums, right?
That's right. And there was it's a very deep history. It goes back, I think, in certain ways to in Spain, right? Spain under the Moors. Many Spaniards were enslaved, that there was a familiarity with slavery as an institution that meant that they had a different approach to it. Slavery, of course, was brutal and awful under the Spanish. But in English colonies like Jamaica, like the colonies that became the United States, right, slaves were not allowed to play drums, were not allowed to get together on Sundays, which they did in New Orleans, of course, which is part of why New Orleans, because it was under Catholics, became so rich musically. Mm. But Havana really became this incredible sort of generator of music and of rhythm. Because it was under the Spanish, slaves were allowed to play drums. And they also just received, over the course of the 19th century, you know, a million plus slaves from Congo, from other parts of Africa.
And that's second only to Brazil, you wrote.
Second only to Brazil. That's right. No, so Cuba is really this incredible sort of receiver of these musics and cultures and people from Africa, and particularly Central Africa, Congo.
What do you think is the one thing that you know about Cuba as its nation that we should all keep in mind as the months and years move ahead?
Well, I think that one of the important things about Cuba is that we think of it as a place apart. But the thing about Cuba and Cuban culture is that it's actually in many ways at the heart of American culture, that we think about even rock and roll, you know, Louie Louie, these bits of music that are part of our culture. They really came from Cuba. Cuba's been feeding America and American culture for a very long time. So it's my hope, certainly, that acknowledging those cultural links and that sort of legacy of friendship has to be at the core of how we think about Cuba, to me.
Joshua Jelly Shapiro is the author of Island People, the Caribbean, and the World. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.